What is it that we're doing in relation to consciousness and physics?
Yes.
That sort of thing. Okay. Well, as it turns out, consciousness is kind of the very deepest root of physics. Consciousness is where it all starts. So consciousness is the super system, if you will. Consciousness is the big picture. So we start with consciousness, and that's the big picture. From there on, if we have just two assumptions, and one that consciousness, you know, is, consciousness exists, and that evolution exists, and by evolution I mean a very generic kind of evolution, and that is that large complex systems that are self-changing will change for their own, you know, for their own benefit. That's kind of the idea of the evolution. So if you just have those two assumptions, all the rest you can derive. From there, you can derive not only our local consciousness, our awareness here, you can derive this physical reality. You not only can derive the nature and basic facts and physics of the physical reality, but you can derive the why of the physical reality. Why is it here? Why are we here? What's the point? You can then go on to develop the physics from those two assumptions. Quantum mechanics is based on an assumption that matter at the micro level is just probability distributions. And it turns out that matter at the macro level is just probability distributions as well. And they work the same way in the macro world as it works in the micro world. You can derive relativity. Relativity is based on one central fact, and that is that the speed of light is a constant. Doesn't matter how the light is moving, the light itself, you know, doesn't matter the velocity of the source, the light from that source always travels at the same speed. And it's a constant called C. And from that fact, special relativity falls out as just a little bit of algebra. And then general relativity falls out of special relativity. So the key piece of knowledge there is that C is a constant. And of course, that's a big mystery, just like why should particles be probability distributions? Real big mystery. Well, if you understand this reality as virtual, and as consciousness is the computer generating the virtual reality, then you can derive these things. The reason that C is a constant is in this virtual reality. Think of it as a simulation. Simulations are driven by the time loop. So you have a delta T. Every delta T, the simulation updates itself. In this reality, that's a very small number. It's like 10 to the minus 43 seconds, 44 seconds. So it's a very, you know, very fast turnaround. That's That's like 30-some orders of magnitude smaller than what we can measure yet. So it's very small. So in any case, every delta T, you can move a piece of virtual information, if you will, from this spot to that spot. And the next delta T, you can move it to the next, you know, adjacent spot. And that's as fast as it can be moved. Well, that, how fast is that? That's C. That's the speed of light. So the speed of light's a constant because this is a virtual reality and how the virtual reality works. So now we're deriving physics, you see. From these understandings, the rest of it is just working out the math. Once you understand these basic ideas. Now what physics has done is they started with working out the math, but don't have a clue as to why it should be that way. Why should C be a constant? Why should particles be probability distributions? It's like, I don't know. It is a big mystery. Nobody will ever understand it, but we know if we make that assumption, we can compute right answers that experiment then verifies. Well, if you start, that's because they're starting in a subset. If you start with a subset of the knowledge, all you can do is calculate from there on. The why, you have to understand the superset. You see, that feeds the subset. So in the superset is consciousness. Consciousness is a digital information field. Then this is a simulation. This is a virtual reality. So you see, if we start with consciousness and understand that consciousness is a natural system, evolving, still evolving, it's still changing. We're a part of that evolution. then all the science, all the physics, and the chemistry and the biology then falls out as logical deductions, if you will, from those few basic things. And it also, you know, tying his conscious to physics, it also explains a lot of other mysteries as well. The paranormal, then, is just normal. It's only paranormal as seen from the subset. Once you have your viewpoint from the superset, there's nothing para about it. It's just normal. It's just the way things work. It's perfectly understandable, repeatable, obvious. It follows logical rules, just like anything else. Look at all the work that's been done at PAIR Labs, Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research. They have shown beyond any shadow of a doubt that mind affects matter. Mind changes future reality, and they don't know why. See, they're still working inside the subset. They only know that this happens. If you do these things, you get results, you get evidence, scientific evidence that mind affects matter. You have the placebo effect, mind affects matter. You have all these things that happen that have been happening for centuries that are mysteries, and the ones that we can't derive directly from physical process, you know, we call those paranormal. Normal meaning it's an objective physical process. So that's how the physics and the consciousness all kind of fit in together into one program. You can solve these mysteries that we've had. You know, what did the Buddha mean when he said that this physical reality was illusion? Well, if you understand from the larger picture, that's not just poetry. That's a fact. You know, it's just the way it is. Why is it that the answer to any question that is really fundamental is love? Love is the answer. Why is love core to this? Well, if you do the physics from the big picture, you find out that love is a evolving. It's the state you get to as you evolve your consciousness. So a highly evolved consciousness is love. And that's our point. We're evolving toward that. So then the metaphysics, the philosophy, the theology, the chemistry, the biology, all kind of fall out of this one overall understanding of the nature of reality as consciousness, and then physical as virtual. And there are multiple realities. This virtual reality is not the only reality frame. There are other reality frames. And that's kind of the overview, if you will, between physics, consciousness, and what we see here.
Well, first of all, Tom, I want to really thank you for being here today, because I'm a biologist and I had to dabble in the physics, and I'm a dabbler in that regard. But then when I hear what you say and what you talk about, then I realize that my dabbling wasn't too far off course. And for me, it's very profound, because as a biologist, the amount of physics I took as a biologist was enough just to get out of physics so I could stay in biology. So basically, I like most all the biologists, trained in a Newtonian physics, and then left that physics behind as we went into biology. And biology, premised on a Newtonian physics, is a mechanical physical reality mechanism, so that a cell is seen as a composition of biochemicals and genes, and it's just looked at as a machine, so to speak. The interesting part about this is what I was actually teaching. When I was teaching in medical school, I was teaching this to students, and coming down to a very simple understanding about the machine itself, called fundamental reductionist view, that it was all driven by DNA. And so when I was teaching in medical school, we were teaching a concept called genetic determinism. This says that the genetic blueprints really determine your fate and your future and the character of your life. It's an unfortunate teaching for this very important reason, because as far as we know, which I'll challenge at some point, we didn't select the genes that we came with. And since genes control our lives, we also cannot change the genes that we came with. So we are being given an education that says we are victims. We are victims of our heredity. And that the genes control us, and as victims, we let go of our own self-empowerment, our own self-control, and give that up to so-called professionals like the allopathic community takes care of my health, I can't do it. So that victimization is what I was teaching. At the same time, I was fortunate enough, and this was 45 years ago, to be working on stem cells, cloning stem cells. And 45 years ago, I can assure you, there were just a handful of us in the entire world that had any idea what the heck stem cells were all about. Stem cells are just multipotential cells. The moment before you're born, that cell is called an embryonic cell because it's a multipotential cell. The moment you're born, can't call it an embryonic cell anymore, you're born, so now we change the name, call it a stem cell, same thing. What my research was all about was simple, and yet the results were so profound that it changed the entire course and track of my life. And what the research revealed was this. I took one simple stem cell, put it in a tissue culture dish all by itself. It divides every 10, 12 hours. After over a week, I'd say maybe 50,000 cells are in the petri dish. The significance is all these 50,000 cells are genetically identical because they came from the same parent. But the real experiment was then take those cells out of the petri dish, split them up into three different petri dishes, and change the environment in each petri dish. The environment to a cell is the culture medium. Cells are like fish. They live in an aquarium, and you have to provide all the elements they need for their life in that fluid of the aquarium, so I make a culture medium. What I did was I took these genetically identical cells, put them in three different petri dishes with three different media with different chemical composition. In one dish, the cells form muscle. In one dish, the cells form bone. And in the third dish, the cells form fat cells. The most profound question you can ask in this research is, what controls the fate of the cells? The answer is clearly it wasn't the genes, because they were all genetically identical. The only thing that was different was the environment. So while I was teaching medical students genes control life, the cells were teaching me that they were responsive and complementary to an environment. And the significance about that was the belief that I was also teaching that genes control life led to the concept that the nucleus of the cell, which is the repository for almost all of the genes, represented the brain of the cell, because that's where the DNA was, and that's where the DNA controls life, and so the nucleus is the brain of the cell. Well, what my research started to reveal was a very simple fact that that was not true at all. The nucleus is the gonad of the cell. It's reproduction. It has blueprints. We gave DNA self-actualization. We talk about genes turning on and genes turning off, genes making decisions, when it turns out they're simply blueprints. Genes are blueprints, and as blueprints, they have no self-actualization. A blueprint doesn't turn itself on or turn itself off. It's just a piece of coded information. What you really want to understand is, who's the contractor? What's the contractor that reads the genes, selects the genes, etc.? My research took me out of the nucleus and brought me to the skin of the cell membrane, which is the first primary structure in the most primitive organisms on the planet. The basic structure they have is a cell membrane. The rest of it is a soupy cytoplasm. The cell membrane, for years by biologists, was considered nothing more than saran wrap with holes in it to let stuff in and let stuff out. And the significance is, in biology, which is a materialistic physical science, they looked at the nature of the cell membrane, saw how that thin that was. You could only see it in the electron microscope, and it just had a little three layers to it. And they said, something that simple can't be that important. And so they dismissed it. My work took me to the cell membrane, and on one evening, which was an epiphany that changed my entire life, a download from the universe, in my quest for understanding the nature of the cell membrane, I defined the membrane in a different way than I had done for 10 years. And on that particular night, I looked at the membrane and defined it as, and this is the biochemical terminology, the membrane is a liquid crystal semiconductor with gates and channels. The gates are called receptors and the channels are called channels. And the significance about that was, at first I thought, wow, what a coincidence. The cell membrane and a computer chip share the exact same names, terminology. But as I started to say, wait a minute, let's check on it, I started to recognize that comparing a cell membrane to a computer chip is not an analogy, it's something we call a homology, meaning its physical structure and its function of the cell membrane are the exact same thing as the physical structure and function of a computer chip. They are both exactly the same. Well, what was so profound for me at the time when I was recognizing this, I recognized, oh, the cell is a programmable chip. The nucleus is a disk with programs, the DNA genes, the hard programs. But the cell membrane was an access device to select the programs and engage the function of the system. So all of a sudden, when I started to look at the cell membrane as the cell, you know, as the brain of the cell, it also then dawned on me, because I was typing on my computer at the same moment, and I realized the cell and the computer are the same thing, but the computer doesn't do anything unless I type on it. And all of a sudden I started to realize a cell has no behavior if it's disconnected from the environment. If you cut the what are called the receptors off the surface of the cell, it's comatose. It just sits there, does nothing. Once the receptors are back onto the surface again, which the cell will replace, the cell then expresses behavior. Simple understanding. The behavior of a cell is a reflection of the environment. And that the environment was what was actually involved with the cell membrane ultimately selecting the genes. And that the cells became a complement to the environment. Yet the most profound piece of it for me as a mechanical cellular biologist so focused on genes and chemistry and all that was as I was at this very same moment putting this together and starting to get this big aha, the biggest aha that hit me and blew me away was the fact that no two people have the same identity. The identity meaning this, if Tom takes cells out of his body and puts it into mine, my immune system will say not self and reject it. Vice versa, I put my cells into Tom's body, his immune system says not self. And at this point I recognize, well look, cells have identity. And when the understanding of cell membrane as a control came in, it also hit me that on the cell surfaces of each of our cells, or virtually all of our cells, there are a set of antennas, protein, glycoprotein antennas, that read environmental information. And actually, a subset of these, recognized by science, are called self-receptors, receivers of self. Of course, they weren't thinking of it in that terminology, but what I started to recognize, oh my God, the self-receptors distinguish one identity from another identity. If I remove the self-receptors from a cell, the cell is generic. And I can implant that generic cell into any human because it's now just a human cell with no personal identity to it. If theoretically, then, I take my cell, take off my self receptors, my cell becomes generic. But if I take one of Tom's cells and then take his self receptors off and transplant them onto my cell, if I take that cell, my cell, put it back in my body, reject it as not self. But I take my cell with his surface receptors and put it back into his body, it's accepted as self. The significance was you transfer ownership and identity by a set of antennas. Well, conventional scientists, of course, only look at these antennas as physical molecules and say, oh yes, the physical chemistry of the receptor is responsible for the difference. It's like they missed the point. Receptors, by their definition, are receivers of information. That my cells pick up a different band of information than Tom's cells pick up. That my cells are picking up information from the environment. That's where the receptors are reading. And what hit me at that moment as being a strictly materialist, physical biology guy, at that very instant I realized, well, wait a minute. If my identity is being picked up from the environment, then if my cell is here or my cell's not here, that doesn't make any difference to the existence of my identity. It's still part of the environment. And all of a sudden I said, oh, my God. I'm not even in this thing. I am a signal being picked up and playing through this body. And this blew my mind because the first thing says, well, immortality is a given. Why? It's the body that comes and goes, not the field information of my identity that's always there. And then I also realized that, oh my gosh, we can't go to Mars, but we really want to know what Mars is all about. So what do? We send up something called the rover. And the rover doesn't look like a human. It's a vehicle with wheels and all kinds of stuff like that, and it moves all over the surface. I say, yeah, but it's the equivalent of a human. Why? It takes the environment of Mars and converts it into what? Vision, smell, taste, sound, all of these things. Why? Because this is how we read the environment. So the rover has receptors to read the environment and pick up this information. But the important part about it is this. rover is not an isolated mechanism on its own. It's being driven by somebody at NASA. And that's sending a signal up, and it's being received by an antenna. But it's not a one-way street, because the rover, in traveling around Mars, picks up the information from Mars and sends it back through the same antenna to the source. So the guy at NASA has an experience of what being on Mars would be like. Well, they hit me. I said, oh, my God, we're Earth rovers. That we receive information, experience information, and then return it to the source. And it was interesting because the biggest aha of all that came from my own cells. I asked a question to the universe, which then my cells answered. I asked a question when I just realized and owned I exist as a field energy, a spirit, whatever you want to call it, as information in the field. And I also exist as a body. My first question that came up in my head was, then why have both? Why have a spirit and a body? Why not just be the spirit? And my cells came up with this chorus that I just blasted in my head. And it was kind of funny because I think they have Jewish heritage cells, because I asked them a question and they responded in a question. I asked, why have both? And all of a sudden it welled up and the answer came and said, Bruce, if you're just a spirit, what does chocolate taste like? And all of a sudden I said, oh my God. It's the biology, which is all the receptor devices that translate my environment into sensation, which are then translated by the nervous system into fields and vibrational patterns, which are then sent back to my source. And I realized at that moment, I said, my God, we're here to experience this place, to touch it and smell it, watch sunsets and feel love and eat wonderful food and have all this. And I thought, wow. And then all of a sudden I said, yeah, but it's not just receiving information. When you have a body, you can be creative. We can come to this planet and manifest creativity. And we do this, we step into a virtual reality suit called the body. I step into the suit as a spirit. It communicates with me via just the same way the Mars rover is communicating with NASA, and I get to experience this planet. Beautiful part about it is, of course, I'm going off on all this stuff and said, well, what the heck is that source that's being read? Well, the first thing is this. It's not physical. It's an energy source. And with more information that quantum physicists have provided us about the biology of proteins, which are the antennas, it reveals that they respond to environmental information through quantum entanglement, through constructive and destructive interference patterns, and all of a sudden it shifted me from my physical, mechanical world to try to understand this. Well, the part is, I'm not the physicist. My dabbling into the physics really came up with a support for all this. But then when I heard Tom say, yes, we come into this life in this virtual reality, I go, okay, we're talking the same thing. And what's so interesting about it is, exactly as Tom talked about, I saw this as a great video game, that I jump into this character. And what's really interesting is, because I mentioned earlier, I said, as far as we know, we didn't pick our genes. If you can go back upwards and say, what am I going to do when I jump into this character, is that I set up a script to run a show. And I set up a script by picking parents and picking my genes and picking all these things. It's sort of like when the video game started to get more complex. Not only were you a character, before you play the game, you say, well, it was like one of the military ones is usually say, well, before you jump in the game, you can have a choice of 4 rockets, 6 hand grenades, 3 of these things and those things. So you pick these things before you jump into the game. And once you jump into the game with those, then you have to play the game with what you just selected. So what I saw was, oh my God, we come in with a vision to learn something, to create something, to manifest something. And in that process, then, we selected the genes, we selected our family, we selected all the aspects of this because you jump into the game. But then the problem is, once we jump into the game, we forget that we're the player of the game, we become the piece in the game. And then if you stay inside the piece, you lose the contact that you're far greater than this, than the piece itself. And so the issue is being the piece, recognizing that we jumped in and we get programmed, and then we play out the program, leads to a very interesting and humorous insight. The movie The Matrix is not science fiction, it's a documentary. And it says that it's time for us to wake up, that we have bought other people's truths and other people's beliefs and manifested a world rather than coming with our own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And that when we give up our power to buy other people's knowledge, then we bought their reality and we manifest their reality. And why this is so important is when I try to tell people the new biology, you are creating this life. And most of them go, I wouldn't create this. You know, war, violence, all this kind of stuff. And I go, well, you're creating it, but you let go of creative control because you bought into other people's beliefs about that control. But I said, here's, I bet you what, though. There was a time in your life where you probably fell in love. And when you fell in love, there was a period which I refer to as the honeymoon. A honeymoon is a period that in most people is exemplified by being in exuberant health, having tremendous energy, you know, making love for days without stopping for food or sleep and all that kind of stuff. And that life was so beautiful in that honeymoon that you couldn't wait for the next day to have more experience like that in this honeymoon. And I said, well, was that tantamount to creating heaven on earth? And the answer is, yeah. Then I say, that was not an accident. That was not a coincidence. That was actually an understanding when you operated from your conscious wishes and desires and overrode your subconscious programming. For the first time in your life, you actually empowered your life with your wishes and desires and created heaven on earth. That honeymoon generally comes to an end when you get so busy that you let go of that and you will get back into the automatic programming of your life, and that honeymoon seems to dissipate at that point. The fact was what? You created heaven on earth. All of us could do that every day of our lives. And so if we understood how we did it, we could, and understand, of course, why we lost it, there's then the understanding is that you could come back and then do this as a perpetual existence on this planet, to live in a state of the honeymoon, to be healthy, happy, and be so creative that you can't wait for the next day to have more. You've already done it once, and we can do it on and on. What we need is the information that Tom offers, because we have to say with more assurity, because as Tom also brought this up, the civilization that we live in is based on what is called materialistic scientism. And it basically says that we buy our truths in this civilization from science because we recognize them as the truth provider. Is it scientific? Oh, that means it's true. Well, we bought our truths from these people. And the fact is, what we have to recognize is that conventional truths, which are based on a Newtonian world of a mechanism and physical reality, are not the reality that Tom is speaking about, that the quantum physicists even knew about in the 1920s when they talked about the whole thing was consciousness in the first place. When the public understands Tom's message, when the public can take Tom's message, integrate it with my message, then what they've already done is recognize, oh my God, I'm an Earth rover, here to create, here to experience, and here to manifest the love which is, I find, from my biological pursuit, and which Tom finds from his physics pursuit, to still be the most fundamental element of both of these sciences. And when they come together and love manifests on this planet, we are already engaged in the next higher level of human evolution.
Yes.